You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 504 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is deep into the night here on Friday evening into Saturday morning. And if you saw any part of the game between the Hawks and the Bucks on Friday night, I'm sure you're sort of dreading this podcast in some ways. I definitely pointed to the fact on Twitter that only the diehards made it all the way to the end of this one. It was very, very lopsided. We will talk a lot more about that game momentarily. I do want to add a couple of topics at the top of this podcast to hold some interest, and because I was already planning to do that even before the podcast began. But we're on a weekend here, a couple of newsy little things that I wanted to hit on before we get into the game itself, and I promise the game will be a little bit shorter in terms of breaking down than we normally do on the pod, but you probably understand why when we get there. But the first thing on the agenda, the All-Star voting actually came in earlier this week, the first returns, I should say. There's still plenty of time, actually, until January 21st to vote for All-Star stuff. Unsurprisingly, the Hawks are not on track to have anybody that's actually going to be starting the All-Star game. That's not a big surprise for a team in their position at this point in time. But Jeremy Lin was eighth, actually, among Eastern Conference guards in voting. Vince Carter was seventh among Eastern Conference forwards. Neither one of those things is very surprising. And actually, they didn't actually get a ton of attention. I think normally you might have seen a little bit more pushback for a couple of guys who are coming off the bench on a bad team for the Hawks, get all that attention. But there was a couple of other interesting voting things with Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade starting in terms of voting stuff in their respective conferences, also Luka Doncic, of course. But, obviously Carter and Lin are not likely to start the All-Star game, but they both have massive fan bases. Not a big surprise there. And by the way, the league did change it to where it's only 50% of the actual formula is the fan voting. So if you do get something that's bizarre, like Derrick Rose or Dwayne Wade, in terms of being voted in by the fans, they probably won't actually get in there because it's only half the voting. And the guys who, probably deserve to be there more will probably be there at the end of the day. But elsewhere, neither John Collins nor Trae Young were actually cracking the top 10. That was, I won't say it's actually a surprise to me. There were some Hawks fans that were surprised, I think, or maybe just frustrated by the lack of Collins' attention. I'm not surprised by that. I do think that he's been fantastic this season. Short of tonight's game, he's been very, very good. And that's worth pointing out. His numbers are really good. With that said, I'm not sure. In fact, I am sure that the national consensus is not caught up just yet with John Collins. I think locally, people are a lot higher on him than people are nationally. I do think the smart people around the league that cover every single team and actually watch the Hawks and know that John Collins can play and that he's good. I don't think that the national perception in that terms of just fan interest knows about John Collins just yet. So that didn't really surprise me. Trae Young not getting a ton of attention. I'm sure if you probably pushed it out to top 20 or 30 guards, you would have seen Trae Young's name. Obviously, there was the Luka Doncic sort of parallel there, where he was actually voted, at least at this point in time, as a starter in the Western Conference. He was actually second in voting in the West. So that little parallel is certainly floating out there. But, Trae will have his time, I'm sure. If Trae is as good as we all think he's going to be, I still have pretty high hopes for Trae Young. I think he has considerable upside, and I think he certainly can live up to that. If that happens, you won't have to worry about Trae Young All-Star voting. He'll be a very, very popular player in the future. He already is. So no worries there. I just want to at least point that out there. Some Hawks fans asking me about Collins especially. Again, I'm not surprised that he wasn't voted in terms of just getting the top 10 attention. I do think that in the future we'll see more of him, and obviously he's a very, very fun player, very productive player, and there'll be plenty more from John Collins. One more thing to hit on here, and that's the Rookie of the Month came out for December. I normally wouldn't spend a ton of time on this, but because Young actually won it for October and November, that was a combined award because October is a shortened month for the league. Young got the win there, and I made the point at the time, and I think rightly so, that Young I think justifiably won for the Eastern Conference in the first month and a half of the season, but that the competition level was not super high. I got to push back for that. I understand why that's the case, but I wasn't trying to shade Trae Young. It's one of those things where it's just kind of the reality situation. The big high-profile rookies this year, really the top three rookies this year in terms of high-profile nature, are Doncic, DeAndre Ayton, and Jaren Jackson. They're all in the West. With that said, Doncic won again for the West, which is not a big surprise. He's the huge front runner for Rookie of the Year at this point in time. But Kevin Knox actually won for the Eastern Conference in December. And kind of amusingly, I think Young was better in December than he was in October and November. I'm not outraged by this just because of the fact that Knox actually had some nice moments. If you follow the awards, stuff like this, it doesn't really matter, to be honest with you. You know, Rookie of the Month, Player of the Month, Player of the Week, all that fun stuff. It doesn't really matter all that much. With that said, if you follow it closely, you will probably notice that players don't often repeat. They have to be sort of leaps and bounds better to repeat. You know, obviously LeBron could win that award almost every month, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't always happen. And I think just because of the fact that Young won in October and November, you would have probably leaned toward Knox. If you look at the numbers, it's not a big deal, but Knox averaged 17 points, 6 rebounds on 40% from the floor and 38%, I should say, from three in December. Whereas Young averaged 16 points and 7 assists with 42% from the floor, 35% from 3, and 4.4 turnovers per game for Trey. I don't think that, again, I think actually I would have voted for Young. That was the big thing for me was that he got a lot of attention in October and November for his performance. And honestly, he was really good in October. November was kind of a rough month for Trey Young, all things considered, with the shooting, all that fun stuff. But for me, the big thing in a vacuum, again, I think, you know, because Young already got the attention, I understood it. But the Knicks didn't win a lot in December, whereas the Hawks actually had their best month in a long time. They were 6-7 in December. Trey was a big part of that. I think he probably should have won it, to be honest with you. But one of those things where I wasn't outraged. Just want to at least point that out there if some Hawks fans were bothered. And I understood why. But I think just all things considered, Young already won it once. He'll probably win it again, honestly, because if you look at the Eastern Conference, it's Knox, it's Young, it's Wendell Carter Jr. Colin Sexton's not been great. I mean, I guess he's capable of winning it, but there's only three or four guys that are really capable of winning it in the East right now in their current roles. I think it's a pretty safe bet to say that Trey's going to win Rookie of the Month at least one or two more times. If there was a Rookie of the Year for the East only, I think he'd be the favorite for it right now. He's not going to beat Doncic. I think I'd be pretty surprised at this point in time if Trey won Rookie of the Year for the league, but he'll definitely be an all-rookie consideration kind of guy, and plenty of positive things to take away from Trey Young right now. Last thing in terms of the news before we get to the actual game itself, is that Erie was in action on Friday. I don't normally talk about Erie a whole lot, but both Amari Spellman and Alex Poitras were there. They actually lost by 2 points. Poitras had 22 points and 8 rebounds in the game against Windy City on Friday night. Spellman actually didn't shoot the ball particularly well. 3 of 10 from the floor, 0 of 5 from 3, but had 9 points and 13 rebounds. I really mentioned this just because they don't play again until Friday, which is a full week. Obviously, you know, not a full week off, but 6 days off from games. I'm actually going to go ahead and predict. This is not inside info for me, but It would make a lot of sense, in my opinion, for the Hawks to bring Spellman back now because, you know, getting him practice time is somewhat helpful in Erie, but honestly, it's probably better for him to be in Atlanta if he's not going to be playing games, and the Hawks are not super shorthanded in the front court right now. They didn't have the injury to Miles Plumlee, who missed this game on Friday, but I think with Erie not playing a game for a full week, I think it's probably a good idea to bring Spellman back, have him with the big club for a home game on Sunday. We'll see if that happens, but it would just sort of, as a stars aligning thing, I tweeted about that earlier. It makes some sense. So it's something to maybe keep an eye on over the next day or two. Normally, I would break up the actual game analysis into two parts in order to put a break in, but we're gonna go ahead and do that now, and we'll sort of combine the entire game into one because the game, as we'll talk about momentarily, did not go particularly well. But please subscribe to the podcast. Check out the entire Locked On Podcast Network. And after this short break, we'll come back, talk about the actual game that took place on Friday night. All right, we're back to talk about the actual game itself, and by the final score, kind of tells the whole story of this one. It was a 144-112 win for the Milwaukee Bucks in this spot. It was the first visit for the Hawks to the new building in Milwaukee, a brand new arena there. It looked pretty nice on TV. I've not been there, but I heard some good things about that particular spot. And by the way, the first of 4 matchups between the Hawks and the Bucks this year. So we're going to be seeing this matchup 3 more times, including 2 more in Atlanta. The first one will be next Sunday afternoon as Mike Budenholzer returns to Atlanta. We'll probably talk more about Bud at that point in time. You know, Bud was obviously a very good, very good coach in Atlanta. I don't want to spend too much time on that now, just because there's a lot of stuff to talk about with this game. But that'll be coming next week, I'm sure, as he returns to Atlanta. But by the way, just to set the stage here a little bit, the Hawks enter this game as 13.5-point underdogs. It actually opened 14. That was the tied for the largest margin of the year in terms of the pregame spread, which doesn't always tell you everything, but early in the year, the Hawks were 13.5-point underdogs in Denver. They were 13 in Oklahoma City, 13 in Indiana, actually. But it kind of tells you the story that most people were expecting a blowout, and a blowout, it definitely occurred here. The first quarter was kind of all you needed to see, honestly. And I will say, before we even get there, the first quarter was basically the entire difference in the game. The Hawks lost this game by 32 points. They lost the first quarter by 29 points. A lot of that was garbage time after that because the Hawks just never made a huge run. But still, it was all the first quarter. And it was a 17-2 run by the Bucks to go up by 22-7 margin. It was all Giannis dominating in the early going, along with Malcolm Brogdon in the first 6-7 minutes. There was a 13-2 run before the timeout. They turned into a 17-2 run after the timeout ended. That was the big blow of the game, honestly, in terms of just the actual competitive portion, which was very short in this game in the first quarter. But the 17-2 run was kind of the end of that. Milwaukee scored 31 points in the first 7 minutes. That will get you beat anytime. They trailed by 29 points at the end of the first quarter. The Hawks at one stretch after about 9.5 minutes in this game had a negative 100.6 net rating. That's not an offensive rating or defensive rating. That's a net rating. They were outscored basically by a point per possession, which is impossibly bad. And honestly, it was a truly awful stretch. It kind of goes without saying. You look at the numbers. They don't really tell. I mean, I guess they do tell the story in this spot, but the Hawks have been pretty coherent offensively this season for the most part. Even when they're not making shots, they've had a pretty good offensive profile. We talked about it on the podcast quite a bit. I know with Jeff Siegel and I, we talked about the shot profile. The Hawks just sort of know what they're doing most of the time. With that said, they were really bad in the first quarter. Lloyd Pierce, after the game, mentioned the fact that they kind of just hung their head, put their head down, and did something that they sort of got out of what they wanted to do in the first quarter. That was very clear. He seemed disappointed by that. You know, to their credit, they battled after that. But the first quarter was just kind of a mess all together. And they obviously couldn't get stopped either. Defensively, we'll talk more about that as we go here, but that was not a huge surprise. Milwaukee's been the best offense in the league by a pretty significant margin this year. They've been awesome offensively, and that wasn't a big surprise. You know, there's no lineup that the Hawks really put out there to defend Milwaukee at a high level. Bud's offense is really clicking, etc. But the offense for Atlanta was really disappointing in some ways in the first quarter, and that was the end of that. But the numbers, here are the numbers in the first quarter. The Hawks were 6 of 22 from the floor, 1 of 9 from 3, and they had 8 turnovers in the first quarter. That's really bad, obviously. Defensively, they allowed 18 of 30 from the floor, 5 of 14 from the floor for Milwaukee, and only one turnover for the Bucks in the first quarter. It was the highest scoring first quarter of the year for the Bucks. It was the largest lead after one quarter in Bucks franchise history. That goes back a long time, and it was also the largest first quarter lead in the NBA this season at 43 to 14 after the first quarter. So that kind of speaks for itself, obviously. I have sort of a laundry list of numbers to read off to you if I wanted to do that, but we'll hold off for now. It's just one of those things where it was as bad as you would think it was. If you miss this game and you're catching up here, I can't tell you how bad the Hawks looked in the first quarter. It was probably the worst they've looked all season long. Part of that, again, is Milwaukee. Milwaukee's really, really good. This is not a spot where, you know, the Hawks have had some terrible quarters against bad teams or middling teams. This is a spot where they played a team that's legitimately really good, and they played really bad, and the end result of that was a 43-14 quarter, and that's obviously as awful as you would think it is. From there, you know, much better, I will say. You know, after the first quarter, just as a big picture item, the Hawks shot 49% from the floor, 41% from three. They had 98 points. They had 13 turnovers, and they just generally played pretty well. The Bucks outscored the Hawks by a 101-98 margin after the first quarter. That was pretty competitive. Obviously, the game itself was not competitive, which probably led to some of the fact that the Hawks were able to hang around in the fourth quarter was pretty kind to Atlanta after they were clearly going to lose. I think the only time the Hawks got to within 26 was early in the third on a Vince Carter three. From there, it was all Bucks. There was a second half. Actually, the second half started with Bembry in place of Hamilton. There was some brief momentum from the Hawks in the first part of the third quarter. Then a 14-2 run by the Bucks sort of silenced all that, go by 42 points. Milwaukee's offense was really cooking, and they had 116 at the end of the third quarter. That's pretty crazy. They had a 140 offensive rating through three quarters. And that was pretty impressive in a lot of ways for Milwaukee. In fact, the Hawks played a lot of guys in the fourth quarter, which is something I wanted to point out. I'm not going through as much detail as I normally would just because the game was so lopsided during the game itself, but the Hawks only had 11 available players. I pointed that out in the third quarter as something to just sort of monitor the rest of the way, because normally you would not see a team's best players playing in the fourth quarter. You didn't see Giannis, you didn't see Middleton, all those guys did not play down the stretch for Milwaukee, which makes a lot of sense. They had a back-to-back as well on Saturday against Toronto, but the Hawks only had 11 guys, and as a result of that, they kind of had to play some of their starters in the fourth quarter just because they didn't have enough guys to go out. And you can't just throw out your bench lineup for an entire, you know, quarter and a half of garbage time. Those guys would be out of gas in a hurry. So I would have probably taken John Collins out of the game. He's the one guy that he was playing in the fourth quarter that I probably would not have been playing. Collins plays a pretty aggressive physical style. and just plays hard. To his credit, his motor is really impressive, and he's sort of the guy that I would not be trying to put out there in a blowout. I will say, though, that's why the Hawks did that. I got a lot of questions about why, like, they checked Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, and John Collins in the game with like 6 minutes left, and that was the reason why. They just can't, you can't let Jeremy Lin play 18 straight minutes. He's going to run out of gas. Same thing goes for Tyler Dorsey or Dwayne Dedman, et cetera. So that's just the reason why that happened. Wanted to point that out. The Hawks did trail by 46 at one point in the fourth quarter. 46 points. Whew. They lost by 32, which was obviously a nice kick to finish. There was actually the one bright side, if you were trying to find one in this game, was DeAndre Bembry. We'll talk about him more later, but he had a career high in this game with 19 points. But you know, the 144 was the second most points allowed by the Hawks this season. They allowed 146 to Sacramento in a home game, which was really rough, and they actually also allowed 144 to Brooklyn. The Hawks have now allowed three of their worst seven defensive performances in the history of the franchise this season. That's pretty jarring. Some of that's pace of play. That's worth pointing out, that you know, the league is playing faster, shooting a lot more threes, etc. So it's a little bit easier to allow that kind of point total than it was for a long time in the NBA. But still, this team is prone to bad defense for long stretches, and that was definitely the case in this game. So we won't take our normal break here. We'll talk about the individual players in this game sort of briefly as we get on the list. We'll start, again, on the one positive. That was DeAndre Bembry. 19 points for Bembry. That was a career high. 7 of 12 from the floor, 2 of 4 from 3, 3 of 3 from the free throw line. You know, not hugely impactful numbers. Like, none of these guys that actually put up numbers in this game were really impactful because they were just trailing by so much. But a pretty efficient night for Bembry, and 23 minutes, 19 points. That's worth noting, and shouts to him for playing. And listen, they played hard. That's something I want to say again about the Hawks, is that they don't roll over. They got bludgeoned on this night. They were terrible in the first quarter. That was the end of the game. But the Hawks just don't quit. Like, they could have easily lost this game by 50, 60. It would not have been surprised if Milwaukee scored 160 in this game. That's how easy they were scoring throughout. Part of that was them pedaling off, I'm sure. But the Hawks just play hard, and they kind of always do, even when they're down by 30. At different points this year, they've been down by 25, 30 points a number of times. They always seem to make a push of some sort with their bench, and there's something to be said for that. Anyway, back to the players off the bench. Alex Len had a nice game statistically with 12 points and 8 rebounds, 3 assists for him. He was 3 of 9 from the free throw line, though, and I think he missed 6 in a row. It was at least 4 in a row, but I think it might have been 6 in a row. Kind of a rough night at the line for Alex. He wasn't great necessarily. Jeremy Lin was sort of a bright spot in small doses. 12 points, 6 assists for Jeremy in 21 minutes, 3 of 7 from the floor, 0 of 2 from 3. He's cooled off as a shooter recently, which was probably going to happen always. He was really, really hot for a while there. It was kind of always going to cool to some degree. We'll see where he stabilizes, but he was pretty solid in this game, I thought. Tyler Dorsey played hard off the bench. He was the last guy to come in for Atlanta. He was the 11th man, clearly. He didn't come in until the second quarter, but Dorsey did play hard. Had 9 points, a couple nice finishes around the rim, had 2 steals. He's not afraid to shoot, to be sure, but he was definitely out there sort of giving it his all. Justin Anderson struggled with his jumper in this game, 1 of 4 from the floor, 1 of 8 from the floor, 1 of 4 from 3. 3 points and 60 minutes for Anderson. Didn't do too much going on there. And then Vince Carter, only 9 minutes. That was a wise choice from the Hawks to sort of limit him. There's no reason to push your aging guy out there for no reason whatsoever in a blowout. Other than Collins, he was the only guy that it made a ton of sense to limit down the stretch, and Carter didn't play much. That made sense. To the starters themselves, Daniel Hamilton took one shot in this game in 22 minutes. He started. You don't often see that. I think friend of the program, Glenn Willis, who writes for me at PeacherHoops.com, found this number for me. Hamilton, this is one of the only times this season where a player that started an NBA game and played at least 20 minutes took only one shot. There are only 12 guys in the entire league this season, 12 players total and 12 instances total in which a guy started, played 20 minutes or more and took only one shot. And Hamilton did that. So, you know, sort of a weird game for Hamilton in some ways. I didn't think he was bad. In fact, he was the only guy with a positive net rating. He was plus one, which is hilarious for Daniel Hamilton in the spot. 2 points, 4 rebounds, but just kind of a funny stat, a quirky one to go along with everything else. Kevin Huerter was the one guy who played reasonably well in the first quarter. He was the only guy that made any shots. He had 9 points in the first quarter. Only finished with 10, though. He sort of cooled off. Nothing to be said for much there. Just one of those things where he was the only guy had it going early on and then kind of cooled from there. Trae Young had actually had a double-double. It was his 12th of the season. He had 13 points and 10 assists in 32 minutes. I didn't think Trae was great by any means, but he made 2 of his 4 threes, which was nice to see. 2 steals. You know, nobody played well in this game, but, you know, Young had some nice numbers. Dwayne Dedmon, 14 points. Only one rebound, which is kind of jarring for a starting center in 21 minutes, but he took 4 of 9 from 3. He got some praise from Lloyd Pierce for coming out and firing in the third quarter. He was sort of the guy leading that charge with a long-range shooting early in the third quarter when the Hawks made their only run, but he did have 5 turnovers, which is something that you can't really live with Dwayne Dedmon, given his offensive role. And then finally, John Collins, 12 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals. Actually, it was a much better game because of the fourth quarter. Before that, Collins really struck. Obviously, he was not good in this game in general. Nobody was. I'm hesitant to pile on anybody in this game because no one was good. Other than Bembry, he was the only guy really that played, I would consider, you know, reasonably well to well. Maybe Lynn would also have that case, but everybody else did not play well in this game. And Collins, you know, before the fourth quarter, I think his numbers looked better as a result of the fourth, but this is probably his worst game of the year. It was definitely in the bottom three for him. And, you know, so one of those nights, he was probably due for one of these. And obviously facing a tough matchup when Giannis Antetokounmpo, who might be the MVP frontrunner at this point in time. Giannis, just for some reference here, had 16 points, 10 assists, and 8 rebounds in 19 minutes. 16, 10, and 8 in 19 minutes. And he was that good. It was not a fluke. He was that dominant in the first quarter, especially. He came out of the gate, just kind of bludgeoned the Hawks. Had 8, 6, and 5 in the first like 6 minutes of the game. Just a tough matchup for Collins in a lot of ways. And I kind of heard the broadcast talking about how Collins needed to just kind of go through Giannis. Giannis is strong. Like, there's no real advantage there. It's probably, if not the worst matchup in the league for John Collins, it might be the worst matchup in the league. It was definitely a rough one for him in some ways, and really for everybody. They couldn't stop Giannis. They couldn't stop Chris Middleton. You know, Bledsoe and Brogdon had their way as well. Brook Lopez hit a ridiculous step back three to sort of set the tone in the first couple of minutes of this game. George Hill played well. Tony Snell played well. Old friend Ersan Ilyasova played well in his first game against the Hawks in a long time. So, yeah, there's a lot of bad things for the Hawks, a lot of good things for the Bucks, and the end result is a 32-point win. I'm probably going to leave it there for now just because of the fact that I could talk about this game forever, but because it had so many weird things. But it was a dominant performance from Milwaukee. They are that good. The Hawks are not as bad as they looked in this game, and we'll see what happens on Sunday. So the Hawks are back in action on Sunday evening. A 6 o'clock tip, which is sort of an odd one, down at State Farm Arena. I will be in the building for that one against the Miami Heat. A much, much easier matchup on paper for the Hawks. It's definitely a more winnable game, to be sure. At the end of the day, though, Atlanta gets swept on this road trip. Not a huge surprise, given that it's a road trip and it's only 3 games. And this was the most difficult of the 3 on paper, and it ended up being that way as well. But we'll see if the Hawks can rebound with a win on Sunday night, and we'll talk more about that regardless as to what happens on this podcast. So please subscribe to the pod. I really appreciate everybody that's already done that. It's been huge. We're starting the month of January in the year of 2019 off on a big note, and I really appreciate everybody checking us out. Please tell your friends as well. If you have a Hawks fan friend that you know likes the team and sort of reads about the team but isn't listening to the pod just yet, please share it with them. I really appreciate that, and we'll see you guys on Sunday night.